fighting for America.
The media market personality Marconi goes to Kevin Miller, KIDOAM, Boise, Idaho.
Fighting for Idaho.
I just want to say to all of you, thank you for believing in radio and local radio. I want to thank Town Square Media. I want to thank Kevin Godwin. I want to thank all my listeners.
Fighting for you.
But in reality, this award is about all of you that believe in radio, that believe in touching people's lives. God bless you all. Thank you.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Jana Jones with us in studio. And you just said that you live in Idaho Falls here. I thought that, you know, I was insulted that you didn't listen to the program.
Yes, that's right. I'm from Idaho Falls, still live there.
Let's talk a little bit about you. Why are you running? And we'll just start with that. When I get excited, I ask 27 questions here.
Uh-huh.
And let's just keep it simple. Why are you running for this title?
Very simple. It was a hard decision to come to run again, because I did run in 2008.
Very close, yeah.
Right. And, having watched what's gone on the last 8 years, the introduction of the Luna laws, the reduction in funding for our schools, I'm a product of Idaho Public Schools, born and raised here. My husband is as well, so are my three daughters. And I now have grandchildren who are going to Idaho Public Schools. And I want them to have the same opportunities that Ross and I had, that our daughters had. And when I took a look at schools and what was going on, you know, I was concerned about my grandkids, but then I started looking, going, you know, and I want this for all of Idaho's kids. We need to get this back on track. We need to do what's best for our kids and stay focused on that and make it a priority. And I believe I have the background, knowledge, and skills to make that happen.
Well, and we appreciate you being here at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Personally, let's ask you an inward question, because it was so close in 08. Any regrets that you could have done more and perhaps prevented the Luna laws and prevented some of these issues that have happened during your time away?
We worked really hard during the last election, and I think we did everything humanly possible at that point in time to come out, work hard, and get the electorate to vote. So I have no regrets about anything that we did or did, you know, and don't even worry about what we didn't do. As far as being engaged since I left,
But you got to look at it and go, man, if I would have won.
Oh, believe me, personally.
Yeah, from a personal level.
From a personal level, sure, because I felt bad what happened to the State Department of Education, who we had worked so hard to build to be strong and supportive of our districts, and that was undermined immediately. And then to watch what's happened to our public schools overall the last 8 years. Has been very devastating. And so, yeah, personally, that's very hard to watch and to take, knowing how strong and good Idaho schools can be. And there is such great potential out there. And our teachers are great, our school administrators, our local school boards, and they've just had their tools taken away from them to continue down that path. And but as far as engagement, I continue to be engaged at a personal level at home.
Sure.
So.
No, I'm with you at 580KIDO. Many critics say, both Republican and Democrat, that our schools are broken. Yet, whether it's Idaho Falls or Pocatello or Coeur d'Alene or in Boise, we have a lot of successes.
Absolutely.
So where do you, as someone who is a product of Idaho education, you've got kids and grandkids invested in the system, your take on where we are? We keep hearing 50th here, 49th there. Your thoughts?
I don't believe our schools are broken, but I believe our schools are hurting. I believe our schools, you know, I was talking to a school board member in Coeur d'Alene recently, who shared with me that he's gone back and looked at their budgets for the last 10 years. And since 2008, they're operating on $4 million less than they were originally, you know, in 2008. And as a result, they've had to pass supplemental levies, which now constitutes 27% of their school budget.
Well, we see that everywhere, these supplemental levies.
Right. We have 94 school districts who have passed those. And what he shared with me is our needs are great. The resources we have to meet them are not there. And if we can't pass a supplemental levy that's been passed on to our taxpayers now at the local level, we're going to be in a real world of hurt.
Well, where does that money come from? And we have a lot of people. We have a great contributor of this program, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, who is frustrated because his grandson has to get his cannot take a textbook home. And they, you know, textbooks, when we went to school, you had your textbooks, whether they were in good condition or not, and you took them home and you did your homework. But if you do that, you have to check them out like the library. And this is in, you know, Boise or Meridian or what have you. So as someone who is running for the state school superintendent, what can you do to make sure that doesn't happen? I mean,
well, a lot of those decisions are local school board, local district decisions. But as a state superintendent of public instruction, what I believe and feel very strongly about, the role of the state superintendent is to be that number one advocate for our kids in our schools. And that's what I would be. And in doing so, you're working with the legislature, you're working with the state board of ed, you're working with the governor's office, and you're explaining and sharing with them how important it is that we have the resources necessary. And, you know, I know that just having money does not equate to a quality education. But the things that fund a good, strong educational system do cost money. And number one is teachers, because the thing that makes a difference in kids and in being good in school is a great quality teacher who's there every day supporting them. To have access to technology and have it work in our schools, have up-to-date school textbooks. You know, I've heard districts say, you know, they're using textbooks that are, you know, 15, 20 years old. Our society changes so quick now, you know, having textbooks that old, they're not up to date. So they have to find other resources that they can give to kids to use.
Sure. So as a Democrat in a highly Republican state, can you make the case? You came close, you know, what was it, 8 years ago? 4 years ago, 20
eight,
years ago,
eight years ago.
Time flies. can you make that case, considering people might just look at the R and go all the way down?
Absolutely. You know, we've had 8 years of governor, legislature, and state superintendent who are all from the same party, and look where we are.
Now, the governor says he's done a good job in education.
Well, you know, if you take a look at where our where we stand in almost every indicator of quality education, Idaho is not doing really well. Have we made great efforts in our staffs and our school districts and our school boards doing everything they possibly can? Absolutely. But are they hurting? Yes, they are really hurting out there. And so I think having a new perspective is absolutely critical. And I know people say, oh, it'll be difficult for you. Well, I've had many, many years. Most of my career has been working with the Idaho legislature, starting in the 1980s when I was advocating for child care. So I know the people who are there.
Right, but on one hand, you could have the Republicans that they're going to keep their majority. And let's say the governor is reelected, and all of a sudden you come up with a budget, and they go, hey, that's not going to fly. You as a Democrat, how can you handle that? When you'll have people like me calling you a lib or something like that because you're tax and spend. That is an issue that they will probably use against you, ma'am.
Well, tax and spend is not in my vocabulary. I'm fiscally conservative. I've been a business owner. I know how important it is to make every dollar count and every dollar work. So what my intention is to bring a coalition of folks together that I'll work with throughout the entire tenure of my being superintendent, where I would have bipartisanship representation from the state, local, and county elected officials. I would have Parents, teachers, school administrators, school board members, businesses, all coming together and making those decisions as a group.
Right.
What are the best policies for Idaho's kids? What do we need as far as resources to do it? So when we go to the legislature or when we go to the state board with proposals, it won't be Janet Jones, Democrat, standing up there. It'll be Janet Jones, superintendent, with these educational stakeholders who all agree this is what's best for Idaho's kids.
We go to Garrett in San Hollow at 580KIDO. Hello, Garrett.
Hey, good morning, guys. Congratulations on the Marconi, Kevin.
Thank you, brother.
My question is, I know that you just said just a minute ago that it's not all about money, but that seems to be the major topic, and I was wondering what portion of the state's budget you think is appropriate to set aside for state education. We're already spending over 51%. Mr. Luna's proposed another $94 million. And so I just, what portion is going to be enough to fund all of these programs that, I mean, is it going to be, you know, that's just K through 12 is 51%. That doesn't count higher education. So, you know, we're approaching 65%, and there's a lot of other things that we could be spending those tax dollars on.
That's a great question, Garrett, because I feel very strongly that we've never clearly defined what constitutes that basic education program that we can make sure that all kids across the state, regardless of where they live, get. And so my proposal and what I plan on doing as state superintendent is bringing that group together to say this is absolutely the bare bones minimum of what every district requires in order to keep the, you know, lights on and buses running and keep quality teachers in our buildings. And then in doing that, also identifying what is that stable source of funding. Because when we lost our property tax leg of the three-legged stool that used to fund public education, it put things kind of in a, you know, in a bad place for us.
Yeah, and so when we look at that, though, is there anything specific that you can say towards what those base standards are, what are the things that we need in these schools to provide that education? Are there things that you, when you look at this, I know it's a big picture thing and every district is different, but there are things that you can see that can be trimmed? Because I think that 51% of the budget is a lot of money for K through 12. You see what I'm saying? Where are we falling short on this education that everyone keeps talking about, that our kids aren't getting the education they need, but it's not a money thing in my mind. I think that money is being misappropriated on the local level, maybe, or whatever, statewide. Are there things that you see that could be trimmed to where that 51% would cover all those needs?
I don't think we've ever clearly defined that, but I do know that in working with our local elected school board officials and working with school districts and even communities, everybody needs a certain amount of resources in order to have their buildings work, to have access to technology or technology in their classroom. I don't have the exact answer because I don't think it should come top down. I think it should come from our districts. The thing, though, that I think is really important that we in Idaho come to an agreement on, or at least I would like everyone to consider, is that our kids need to be our number one priority. And education is the way that we keep our kids as a priority. In order to get new businesses into Idaho, in order to have our state have a strong economy and stay there, we need a strong education system. I was just in Driggs, Idaho, talking to the mayor this week, and he shared with me the number one barrier to economic development for his small community is education, because he can't get businesses to come there, and people don't want to move their families to Idaho because they don't feel like we care about our kids.
Garrett, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Five eighty KIDO. Janet Jones with us. candidate for state school superintendent, superintendent of public instruction. That is the right title. If you're
correct.
An educator, you'd probably correct me on that. So self-correction here.
I promise I won't correct you.
I appreciate that. We get a lot of that here. Phone number is 580-5436. We have a young lady Facebooked us saying, you know, you have a lot of people that live in one district, but their kids go to another. Is it possible, is this in your jurisdiction, if elected, to require these folks that if they're, you know, live in Meridian, they're sending their kids to Boise to pay taxes to Boise schools?
The way that that works is that it really is done at the local level, not at the state level, that if a parent is accepted or can move their child to a different district to either work it out between the two districts if there's going to be an exchange of resources for that student or not. And I think it's best if it remains at a local level and that we're not doing it from the top down.
We go to Blair in Boise at 580 KIDO. Good morning, Blair.
How are you, Kevin?
Great, welcome.
Congratulations on the Marconi.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, so my question is, the educational studies that I've seen seem to indicate that money really isn't the big factor in education. It's parental involvement. So my question for your guest, and I really appreciate her for coming on, is how do we increase parental involvement?
That is a great question, and you're right. The money isn't the only answer to education and how we improve education. And you're right when you talk about parental involvement and how it does have a strong impact on how kids do in school. The thing is you know, we don't want to have government mandating how parents are raising their kids or how involved they are. The thing that we can do in our public schools, and they work very hard at doing, is to engage parents in any way they can. They have nights like a math night at school where parents can come to school and learn about what they're doing in math. They have ways for parents to volunteer in the classrooms. But in our society now, we have so many parents that are working outside of the home that finding new ways to engage parents and engage them with their kids and help them with their homework or do other kinds of activities that support the school so that the kids can see that their parents are partnering with the schools. I think we need to do a better job at the school district level to find ways that we can engage parents meaningfully without them having to impact their work situations, because many of them just flat out can't get time off to volunteer or to help out at schools that way.
Right, and you have a lot of people doing fundraisers. Blair, thank you for the call here. Let's go to a couple more questions from our friend, let's see, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, saying, how can we, the superintendent of schools, address the crisis in our secondary schools regarding lack of funding so that our schools can go back to purchasing textbooks or other materials, software that will allow parents and guardians to tutor the children at home? Many students don't have textbooks issued, and so when they take their math and other homework home, their parents have no resource materials to refer to in order to help their children with their homework.
Well, that's been a resource issue that our school districts since 2008 have really been struggling with, is having resources to purchase up-to-date textbooks and have enough textbooks for students to be able to, like when we went to school,
right,
have books that we carried home. So as a state superintendent, again, what we can do is advocate for those resources so our districts have can at the local level make those choices. I agree. Parents need to have, in order to support their students, they need to have access to what the students are learning. I know many of our districts on their websites have parent portals where parents can go in and actually see the teacher lesson plans. We need to do more of that. But then we also have families who don't have technology in their homes. So for those families who still care and want their kids to do best, we need to have other methodologies, including letting them send their textbooks home. But again, it's a resource issue for districts, so they end up limiting sending textbooks home or every child having their own book at that point in time.
Let me hit you with this. So this is from Jim and Star at 580 KIDO. Can you ask why private schools do more with less and public schools continue to ask for more money?
Well, we have no evidence that that in fact is true and that that happens, because we don't have access to what resources private schools have, that sort of thing. And they depend heavily on a lot of fundraising. They depend heavily on people contributing, you know, through other methodologies to their schools. So while they're not maybe getting the state dollars, they do depend on the families and benefactors to support their schools in order for them to operate efficiently. So I just have not seen any evidence that private schools can do more with less.
Let me hit you with this here at 580KIDO. Do you believe the newest proposal by the current State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tom Luna, for tenured certification, the tenured track?
The tiered track?
Thank you. See, I thought you weren't going to correct me. It's good that somebody here is paying attention to the
tenured
news.
Well, tenured has a different connotation for tiered, many
but
people.
But you know where I was going,
I
so thank
exactly
you.
I knew exactly where you were going. The tiered track is an the intention of doing tiered licensure is to elevate the profession of teaching, and that we through doing that we get better teachers. And
no,
in
I understand the propaganda. They threw that in Ohio 20 years ago.
Right.
So I have to ask you, do you support that?
Right, I support the concept, but I do believe that where they are right now in Idaho, that we haven't got it right yet.
See, I think
there's so much controversy out there right now. I think we need to slow down, take a look, and say, what do we really want to happen? And
I haven't seen a state where it's worked. I think it's a propaganda by the state school superintendent to appeal to his base, based on the fact that, you know, you have people, oh, we're going to get rid of the bad teachers. I mean, how many? This isn't going to get rid of the bad teachers. This is affecting teachers. If you come in, okay, what, you get the learner's permit, then you're a professional. And allegedly, if you're a good person and your administrators like you, then you get the master's certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, let's focus on the real issues as opposed to this.
Right. Well, and I think if it is going to improve academics for our kids, improve outcomes for our kids, and we can do it in a meaningful way, then I'm all for it. But if there is no evidence out there that shows that that this is going to make a difference, we shouldn't be spending our time here.
But you know how teachers are. They're not going to like this. They're going to look at it as a slap in the face.
Well, right now it feels that way to them.
Oh.
Because when they came to the table originally with the governor's task force, they were on board for working on a licensure and a career ladder process that would help them as teachers become better. We adopted in this state an evaluation process that really is a way to improve teaching and for teachers and school administrators to work together to identify strengths and where they need to work in a very positive way. I think we need to continue to look at those things.
Right.
But I think right now with where we are in the process, we need to just slow it down and really make sure that everybody's in agreement on what we're trying to do here.
Your website quickly?
JanetJonesForIdaho.com.
You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning. Welcome back to Monday at 580KIDO. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
So you saw a movie over the weekend.
Yep, I went and saw the movie Gone Girl, which was the number one movie at the box office, and a very good movie. It was well done, Ben Affleck in it. Well done, which I'm not a big Ben Affleck. I don't think of myself, I've got to go see Ben Affleck. But went and saw this movie. Very good. I was told the book is very good as well.
What's the premise?
Premise is, boy, I don't want to tell you too much. Lady disappears, husband becomes suspect immediately. And it's a story how it all unwinds. It's, you ever see the movie Star Chamber, Michael Douglas movie?
Mm-mm.
And it took probably five different twists and turns in it. And at the end, it's like, holy cow.
Right.
That's the way this one was. It just took twists and turns everywhere. And every time he turned around, it was like, oh no, really? So very good movie.
So you ever see, it's an older movie, kind of like Shattered?
The movie was called Shattered?
Yeah, it was about a guy who didn't remember who he was. He was and he became a really good guy, but in the end, he was in this automobile accident. I think Tom Berenger was the star, and he gets in a big automobile accident, and then he finds out that he was a real jerk.
Yeah, Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like a twist and turn type thing. You never see it coming at the end.
Yeah, and that's the way this is. It's just very well written. And a lot of twists and turns. You just don't see it coming.
Huh. So the ending is pretty good, huh?
Yeah. I'll just leave it at that. I just don't want to tell you too much. If you go to see it, or you know, later you rent it, or if you're reading the book, don't want to ruin it for you.
I see.
But a very good movie. Theater is full.
Theater was, well, that tells you the economy's working hard. Then the economy's back. Everything's the best ever.
Okay. All right. If you want to say that, I somehow think it's all kind of suspect, but.
Well, I mean, how else do you explain it? And again, I'm just saying, I was watching the Sunday shows, and you would think that everything is great. We've got added 10 million new jobs. We've added this. We've added that. It's the best ever. Look at what happened in 08. And I couldn't believe the arrogance of David Axelrod, President Obama's architect of the reelection, having the audacity to damper the Ebola concerns. Well, look, we had this West Nile, we had this swine flu a couple years ago, and that was the thing. Joe Scarborough was saying, look, we've got the CDC saying that they knew about this in June. They went to the White House. Doctors Without Borders was yapping about this. And then the arrogance of David Axelrod to go, thank you, Dr. Scarborough. And you're thinking to yourself, these are people's lives that we're dealing with. And apparently, the Liberian man is not doing well in Texas.
No, he is fighting for his life. Evidently, not taking the drug, it would not help him at this point where it's at. So it's just, you know, you're on your own to get recovered here.
But just the attitude of people, and I, you know, as you know, for me, this is fun. So I'm mowing the lawn, and I tape shows across the country. So I listen to them. And you had a guy who was trying to do his best out of, we'll just say the state of Indiana. And then people ripping him for being an alarmist. And yeah, he could have been a little bit more diplomatic in his approach, but he was just reciting the statistics. You know, you go to school, you're on planes, you can catch this thing. And people are going, well, you're scaring us. Well, I think people should be scared.
Well, when this first came up early last week, you know, I mentioned it not to try to put panic in people, but just it's something to be very aware of and to watch. And I think if you're going to see some spread in the Dallas area, I think it would be this week that we'll start hearing people, somebody else is sick. With that, you know, the 8 to 21 day incubation period, that would mean sometime this week, if anyone else can contract it, it'll be now.
Well, and then Rand Paul, who's a doctor, going, 4,000 troops coming back on a ship.
Oh,
not
I know.
Good. And then they started ripping him.
Yeah, and what is it they're doing over there? Are they helping to build? I mean, they're not treating anyone. Are they helping to build something? What is it they're doing?
You know, I don't know, but I mean, everything is political with this group, and it's like nothing is ever their fault, and everything is political, and don't worry about it. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, if that truly is the case, then, where's your solution? Oh, it was President Bush. President Bush's fault. You know, everybody's fault but their own, and I'm thinking, well, this is something that should be political, and you talk about this. Well, the R's and the D's need to put these things aside. I think it's terribly difficult when you have one side that refuses to put that aside.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's trying to couch themselves on the political side of everything, and you're absolutely right. This is a health crisis. This is a problem facing all of us and the entire world, and politics need to be set aside. But unfortunately, no matter what it is in these days, everybody's got to try to couch themselves in the right position.
Yeah, and we see that, unfortunately, when we're talking about people's lives and everything else. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll have the latest on the Ebola craze. Also, I'm trying to think of anything else going on in the world. Sports, the big news over the weekend. Before we get to that, HP splitting into two companies.
Yep. One, their printer division going one way, their computing division going the other direction. So, you know, obviously has huge implications for the Boise market.
That and our friends at ISIS are at it again as well.
Yeah.
Beheading somebody over the weekend.
Yeah, I think, was it a Brit this time?
And then they swear it's going to be an American next time.
Yeah, I believe it was a Brit this time. And reports out, you know, that the bombing that took place has affected them but not stopped them.
And apparently the special forces, the Brits, know where everyone is. They know where Jihadist Johnny is, but they can't get to him because the security is too tight.
You would think you could get to him.
Right. And I'm thinking, are you not the United Kingdom? Are you not in this with the United States of America? You know, why are we broadcasting this?
That and Joe Biden kind of nixed himself out of any potential presidential run over the weekend by being a bumbling boob twice in a row.
Right.
And blasting some of the Middle East countries where they probably shouldn't have been. So he has issued two public apologies over the weekend.
Boy, you're an expert on social media, are you not?
No, but what about it?
I'm looking at my Facebook page here, and I've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people have posted on my page before I've even... I mean, what's the etiquette? Is that okay that everybody posts on your page and blah, blah, blah? Or do you just kind of look at your page as your thing? How does that work?
It's two things I don't like. One, people posting on the page, and the other, all the commercial ads.
Right.
Mixed into my newsfeed thing or status or whatever it is. That just drives me crazy.
Right.
But there's a lot of it.
Yeah, I don't get this. It's just like...
slowly not your page.
Right. And here I but like I said, it's, you know, I'm taking these off my timeline. And look, that's great that people are putting this stuff on, and it's wonderful. But come on. I didn't even get the post where Boise State won.
They did win. Big win. Down, we're not going to play Nevada, what, for two more seasons or three more years or whatever. So left a big mark. And again, as it always is with Nevada, it's always a race.
That was an interesting game, and I thought that the game plan was well intentioned to give Grant Hedrick time to develop, run his running led to his passing, and Nevada tried, but they just weren't there. And of course, the turnovers. And going down to the final seconds, I kept having to change my headline. Broncos win, Wolfpack strikes back. I mean, I was rewriting that thing like 27 times about 12:30 Sunday morning.
Yeah, I think it ended officially at 12:12 or something like that. It was officially done. It's like, oh, my goodness, will this never end? But, no, for those who wanted to blast Grant Hedrick last week, they've got to praise him this week because he came through. So, I guess what you have to ask is consistency.
Yeah. On the other hand, though, in fairness, how many interceptions did he throw?
Was it two, three?
No, it was a couple interceptions and a couple fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had three turnovers to four for Nevada. Ajayi fumbled once. Hedrick fumbled once. Maybe they weren't interceptions, they were fumbles. And you think to yourself, come on, guys, can't we get it together?
Yeah, turnovers happen, and it's a big part of the game. It's a big part of why you lose, why the loss to Air Force, turnovers.
Right, and they were really unforced turnovers. It was like a bobbled snap, if I recall this.
Yes, there was one bad snap. He pulled out too quick.
Right, and there was something else, and you think to yourself, okay, great teams don't make mistakes. And in fairness, as you know, my Western team, Oregon, lost. And, I still think it's a Chip Kelly issue. Their offensive line stinks, blah, blah, blah. Bama lost, and I was happy about that. They have problems on defense, and somebody said something to me, sorry they lost, Kevin. I go, when you don't score in the second half, when you can't cover, when you can't hit field goals, when you can't do this, you deserve to lose. And they lost. It's interesting. So many teams in the top 10 did lose this weekend.
There's always one weekend, it seems like, in college football where things go nuts and it's a chance for other teams to jump up in there, which Ole Miss has now jumped up to number 3. Arizona, I think it was, jumped into the top 10 out of nowhere. So there's always one weekend in college football, it seems like, that things go crazy, and I'm assuming this was it.
Well, you take a look at the new AP out today, because we don't have the BCS anymore. You have Mississippi and Ole Miss, Mississippi State and Ole Miss tied at number 3. You have, and I know you that love the SEC, you have 3 of the top 5 teams from that conference again. What do you make of that?
Again, to me, the SEC, they have 5-6 very good teams and the rest are trash. So they get, they get a lot of credit for the 5-6 elite teams that they do have, and they are elite teams. To me, again, it's that SEC bias, but what do I know?
Now, what teams are trash in the SEC? Vanderbilt and who else?
Mm-hmm. Isn't Kentucky an SEC team?
Kentucky beat South Carolina over the weekend.
Yeah, Kentucky's a real powerhouse in football. They're good in basketball.
No, I'm just saying that Stoops' brother seems to be doing something there. So, okay, is it South Carolina? is it Kentucky that's in the bottom of the SEC? Because usually you'd be right about Kentucky.
Is Arkansas a great team?
Arkansas hung with Auburn fairly well, and they'll play Alabama this weekend.
So what does that mean? Does it mean Auburn's not that good?
Well, Auburn's number two in the country. So I think, and I have to say this, I think we might actually see a rematch this year. And I hate to say that as an Alabama fan, but Auburn just seems to have it clicking.
Yeah.
What they did to LSU over the weekend, now out of the top 25. But getting back to Arkansas, we'll see what happens. Do you believe that they have the largest offensive line, not in college football, but in football?
Yeah. That's some big kids.
It's going to wear you down. So, okay, you have Auburn. I mean, so I'm trying to think, well, what happened to the Pac-12? You know, USC losing on a last-second bomb, UCLA losing. Is that a sign of the conference, or is it just the Pac-12 not very good? I mean, you're trying to move your SEC logic over to the Pac-12.
Well, and what I'll say is time will determine, and we'll see whether they're that good and it's that balanced or if they're posers. Time will tell us here.
If they're posers, isn't everybody a poser?
Well, yeah.
No, it's troubling, though, and I don't know if there'll ever be a book on it. Probably not, because the big money publishers will never allow it to be written. The whole collusion to keep out, well, the only team left really is Boise State. Props to TCU for beating Oklahoma, but...
East Carolina.
East Carolina's in the Conference USA, but you take a look at East Carolina, and, you know, of course, they won when not Schnellenberger was there, but somebody was there. They were in a bowl many years ago. Remember that Jeff Blake was their quarterback?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was a year. Well, let's see. I know they beat Boise State in a Hawaii Bowl one year.
But then I think they played Louisville or somebody in the Big Bowl. However, back to the point, I guess East Carolina is the team now outside the Power Five that's going to get the.
That's what it appears.
Wow.
So we'll see how they do. I got to do this. Your traffic now. By the way, 7:20 special.
All right, coming up next, our friend Greg Pruitt will join us. We'll talk a little bit about guns in the news here locally and the latest concerning your rights to keep. The Second Amendment ruling here in the state of Idaho. Keep it here, 580 KIDO.